Check, check, check. Oh, with the massive Happy New Year. Wow, it has been a year of chatting between takes. I'm Sean Benson. I'm your host. And welcome this fine morning. It's actually January 4th, I think. I never get around to these when I think I'm gonna. My apologies. I owe you all an amends, except that I doubt it will change, so it's not a true amends. It's just me pretending. I'm back in studio. Studio means coffee. It means the cat at the window, the other cat in front of the fire. And I got a little treat for y'all a little later today. We're going to get to that. It's a little Christmas, New Year's treat. First thing I want to say is thank you. Truly, truly thank you. I don't know why I like doing this. There's no reason to do this. Nobody pays me and no one cares, which I know isn't true. I get such lovely messages from you guys, and I really appreciate every one of them. Just about listening, you know, I make this to be heard. So the fact that that's happening is amazing for me. And so truly thank you. You know, 45th episode this is. You won't have heard 46th maybe. You won't have heard Katie Boland's yet. Brilliant podcast that I'm posting right now, but you will have heard it by the time you're listening to this. This is like the Star Trek Next Generation where there's three Picards. It's that good. By the way, Star Trek after the Next Generation just kind of lost the plot for me. I think next was Deep Space Nine. I'm sure I've talked about this. Just didn't have it. Voyager didn't have, I don't know. I mean, all those were good actors and all that was, but I remember watching Deep Space Nine, and you had that guy who was like the hologram or something, and he was basically the Data ripoff, and Data was obviously the Vulcan, but come on. It just got, at that point, it was so derivative, I thought. So you can send your hate mail to Chatting Between Takes, and hey, you know, we accept love and hate equally here at Chatting Between Takes, so you get a mug either way. You want to send me some shit about Deep Space Nine? And it's not because I'm racist that I don't like Deep Space Nine. Oh, we're cooking a nice instant. I don't need this coffee. I've already had one this morning. But it's kind of like the old drug days where I couldn't phone you without hitting a bit of blow. So I can't talk to you without a little bit of coffee. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? What's the worst thing that can happen? Well, I guess I could, like, I don't know, destroy my gastric lining if I drink too much coffee. I guess there are bad things that can come from, I don't really drink that much coffee. I drink a lot of coffee when I'm talking to you. Is 4 cups a day a lot? I'm actually asking because I was kind of shocked with Monster Beverage the other day. I looked at Monster Beverage before going out for New Year's because I love Monster Beverage. No affiliation. They're not sponsoring us that I know of. And it has about as much coffee as like an Americano. You know, it's everyone complains about it, but I guess it's all the sugar and taurine. And like I talked about once, I think I posted this on Facebook. People were shocked when they found out that because of the taurine, that there was bull semen in some samples of Monster or one of these drinks. I'm sure I'm going to get sued by saying that. But to me, that's the point. If I'm drinking an energy beverage, don't I want a bit of bull semen? I mean, isn't this what I'm doing? And because I'm not like a Japanese man who's willing to cut the dorsal fin off of a dolphin to increase my erection, I'll take a little bull semen. You know, I think the bull's probably enjoying giving that up a lot more so than the dolphin with the dorsal fin. So, fucking A, man. I hope there's tons of bull semen. That's actually what this coffee might be missing right now. So I might get a little bit of energy, but I don't know how much vitality I'm getting, because we all know that vitality is what you really get from bull semen. I'm going to play you some songs later. So let me talk a little bit about my holiday. This was the best Christmas of my life, hands down. So Emily and I are real, what's the word? We love holidays. We love Valentine's. We love Halloween. And we don't pretend we don't. And so I'd say like late November, we're starting to hint at each other what we're getting each other for Christmas and this and that. We always have a budget. It's not insane. But it's the excitement of it. It's hanging the lights. It's putting up the tree. Love it. Absolutely love it. The fire, and even, you know, I mean, it wasn't a bad December at all, but even the fact that it's cooler is enough for those nights in. Really, that's what it's about, is nights in. You know, we're going to hang around by the fire and read magazines and have the cats and do all that kind of thing. And so then I have been, not in that airy-fairy hippie shit way that I don't like, I've actually been blessed. Like, I don't have anything I need. Life's been good. Work's been good. If I fucking need a pair of sunglasses in like September, I just kind of get them. So I've been able to sort of self-parentingly spoil myself, within a budget. That's fucked up, man. Like, that's fucked up because my parents used to spoil me, God bless them, but they did it without me having a sense of the budget. So what I got was this sort of distorted sense that I can just have whatever I want whenever I want it. And I'm fucking broke at age 33 because I didn't understand. It's not their fault, but I didn't understand. I had zero tools for money other than how to spend it and how to shop. So anyways, it's pretty lovely to me that, you know, mid-year of 2015, I'm like, shit, what am I going to get for Christmas? And then I think I was asking for like boxers and this or that. It was very simple. It was very simple requests. A lot of them, though, because, you know, a lot of people wanted to get little gifts for each other. I trade with my family and Emily's and her mom and stuff. And so basically the point of this is I'd ask for a bunch of stuff. Cool shit, headphones, boxing gloves, this and that. And then Emily calls my brother and goes, listen, yeah, we can get him all the little stuff. Why don't we all pool our money and get him a piano? A digital Yamaha P115 motherfucker of a piano. And they did. And there's lots of surprises and fooling going on. Oh my God. So let me talk a little bit about piano. I started when I was 5. It's the first instrument I played until I was about 10, maybe 12. And then I just didn't give a shit about it. I wanted to play guitar. But by that point, I knew how to read music, play music, whatever. I mean, our kids are going to start with some piano. Two hands, you're learning bass and treble clef. It's the way to go. So I basically love piano, but don't really care about piano. Like, I actually want to get better at guitar. So every time I'm playing guitar, I'm hoping to be better. Like, I'm practicing and I'm going for the lick. And unless it's just around the campfire where, you know, the guitar is basically the backing track for everybody to karaoke, I really care about what I'm playing, like, deeply. Piano's way more laid back for me. And it's one of these things that, you know, that's why the gift is so great. Not only because it's obviously a lovely item, but it is one of those things in my life that I've been talking about. I don't sit down at the piano and hope my bass hand gets better. I just play. Just play. And it's a bit like that BMX I bought, where it was just like not to drive in a straight line. By the way, that's for sale on Craigslist right now, because I don't fucking, I'm not 14 anymore, and I was never riding it. But what's the worst that could happen is that I bought something, I have to sell at a loss. Not wise, but it was worth it to explore that. I don't think this piano is going on Craigslist anytime soon. This thing is fucking brilliant. So I'm going to play you guys one, maybe even two songs later. I'll play you probably a little cover and then one I wrote. So I'm super excited about that. Yeah, the Christmas was just beautiful. And the other thing, too, is that Emily and I really have our groove for Christmas. And also having a budget really helps, right? So I kind of knew exactly how much I was going to spend. And by the way, if you're not doing this, people, I really recommend it. I kind of know what I spend every year at Christmas. And I divide it by 12. So for January, I'm going to put 1/12 of all my Christmas money into an ING account. And then guess what? Fucking December shows up and I'm never stressed about money for Christmas presents. It's sitting, waiting, and has been gently gaining interest for the year. FYI, this is what I did for my car. This is what I do for my clothes. This is how I got from being broke to not broke, was by going, dude, you fucking know what your union dues are. You fucking know what your gym membership and karate stuff, like, you know what these are. They're not surprises. So quit pretending they are as an adult man. You know, give your head a shake and actually just do some simple addition, subtraction, division, multiplication kind of math. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. Like, I was pretty smart as a kid. And by the time I was in university, I was lecturing my own calculus class. So when my prof would go on vacation, he'd say, "Hey, Sean, I want you to take the class." I think I've talked about this before. I mean, I think I've talked about everything before. I have 9 stories, and they're all going to get repeated. And I said, "Dr. Milne, I think I only got like 87 on the midterm or whatever." He's like, "I know you're just sloughing off. Like, come on, you know this stuff." I was like, "All right, I can do that." So, I mean, this is the caliber of in understanding of the things I was doing with regards to math when I was a kid. Physics, I think I got 100 on in first year, and that was basically mechanical physics. So that's all math. I've never, ever since university used anything but addition, subtraction, and maybe a little bit of multiplication and division if I'm really getting creative. I just talked about, you know, dividing by 12. And then I might have a little bit of fun at the racetrack. Like, and again, this is just addition and subtraction. We hung a bit of framed photo art last night, and it was addition and subtraction. And then make sure I do it 2 or 3 times, because measure twice, cut once. So other than bragging about my math prowess, the point is that I think we're often taught stuff we don't need and not taught stuff we do. And I know it's a really basic, like, David Chilton wealthy barber concept, which is, how are we not taught budgeting in school? How in high school do we not have a mandatory class that says, this is like what a mortgage is, and this is what taxes are, and this is what, I don't know, I mean, I'm not even talking about investments. I don't really have much in the way of investments, because, you know, getting out of a hole, basically, it cleared my decks, so to speak. Hold on, I'm getting some peaking here on the mic. I'm gonna check this sound and come back. Now we're back. My sound waves are not quite right. You know what they always say when you're a pilot: don't trust your instruments. I think that's the first lesson. And if I were in pilot class, obviously I'd end up teaching that lesson. But no, I didn't learn how to do that budgeting. But eventually I learned, hey, if you just learn how to add, subtract, divide by 12, you're going to actually be a financial rock star to yourself. And that's that wonderful thing about spoiling myself while self-parenting in a responsible way. Motherfucker! Resolutions. What are the New Year's resolutions? Okay, I like resolutions. I really do. I think it's a nice way to go, okay, what am I up to? Now, I think that I do a lot of these. I think that during the year, I often, for example, I just did another month on not on Facebook or Instagram, and then now I'm back. I don't delete the accounts or anything. It's just a way for me to make sure I'm not habitually falling into things that steal my juice. And so that's been good. I don't even know if it's been that long, but it was enough to make me, you know, not check it all the time. And it was the holiday. What the fuck do I need to be? I don't know. Whatever. It's a perverse relationship I have with this stuff, because it's a perverse relationship I have with myself. And all these things are as mirrors of my own insecurity or whatever. Not always, by the way. I mean, fuck, posting a photo of a good thing or a fun thing or chipping in about a movie or all that stuff. How to Marry a Murderer. Woo, right? This series starring Marilyn Monroe. Wait a minute. I think I got that confused. Making a Murderer. This, if you had told me that a month prior to the show coming out, the most viral thing was going to be a 10-part series that basically has episodes that are 50 minutes of just courtroom testimony, and it's from the past. It's not like it's a Kardashian or anything. I'd have been surprised. I don't know that I'd have invested in that, because it is awesome how, I mean, it's such an intelligent show, and it asks you to hold so many details in your head. I mean, look, it's a very guided bit of viewing. I'm not even suggesting it's biased, but it's so well done that it guides you to think and feel certain things. I'm definitely not crassed on this, but I will say that it's a specific point of view being presented. I think that's a good thing, though. I think that's why it works so well, is because we're all yelling at the fucking TV. But anyways, I love these resolutions. I love making these plans throughout the year that I'm going to do more or less of different stuff. And usually it's in relation to my weight, my relationship, social media. Most other things tend to be grooving pretty good. However, these are my resolutions. They're very simple. I kind of have 3. One of them, it's a bit vague. It's to do things that make me feel like me. Now, the best way I can put that is I grew this beard and I cut my hair the way I wanted to. Not for a part, not for anything. I just kind of, I look the way I want to look right now. And I'm wearing the clothes I want to wear right now, and a part of that's holidays. But I've never not booked a part because I didn't or did have some kind of facial hair. There's no way to fucking do that dance, because one day I can have to audition with a beard and the other day I cannot have to have a beard. And the thing that pisses me off about this industry currently is when I was younger, I remember there being a lot more chemistry reads and screen tests. So you'd go in, you'd audition, and they'd be like, wow, we fucking love this guy. Can he come back and can he shave? And what they're saying is we're really interested and we want to remove any roadblocks to perceiving this guy as the guy. Now, for example, this December or November, I auditioned for one series that was clean cut. So I shaved a beard. And then the next day I get the breakdown for the other series that says, hey, this guy's been out in the woods. He's got a beard. And I'm like, you know, now here's the thing. The first show, I was right to shave because, I'm not kidding, lead of a series, and I'm auditioning, reading 4 pages, not like 12. I'm not reading with any other actors, just the reader in the room. Well, for those of you who aren't actors, the reader's just someone who facilitates your audition, but they're in no way invested in the project. And based off of that, that's your screen test. Like, they were really interested, and then I went to network on it, and then I didn't get the part. And it's like, I didn't even have a script, by the way. So you're going to network and they're basically going to offer you a part or not. And you've read 4 pages of this show and you haven't even really been able to gear up much. Now, the flip side is, I always say, we get cast for who we are, not what we do. Our talent is taken for granted. Actors get so mad at this when it's like, ah, your talent's not that important. It's like, no, it is important. Because you're never going to go anywhere without it, other than the odd, like, celeb who's a, like, internet celeb or whatever. But for the most part, your talent's what's going to get you there in the room. And then at that point, it's kind of taken for granted. So it's not that it's not important. It's totally important. But at a certain point, it's like, yeah, that guy's talented. Now, who is he? Who is he? Is he the dad we want? Is he the criminal we want? Is he the cop or lead we want? You know, and that's really where it doesn't matter that much about the beard or this or that. And honestly, surprisingly, it doesn't even fucking matter that much if you have the script, as long as you're not betraying story points. There's a weird helplessness to it all. My point with that is, because there's a helplessness, because it can't be controlled, I'm just going to fucking do what makes me feel like me without giving anyone the finger. Unless it's a specific, you know, I'm not talking professionally. If somebody deserves the finger, they get the finger. Hey, you deserve the finger. And I don't mean the finger that I know of. So that's one of my resolutions. Do things that make me feel like me. Now, I'm making this really venty and angry. It's also just for, like, I don't know, what do I want to do on a given Tuesday evening when I'm done karate and have nothing to do? It's like, let's see what makes me feel like me instead of what I should do. That's kind of what I'm getting at. Should is a parent word. You should, you should, you should. And I certainly don't want to adopt that myself and start telling myself all this stuff I should do. Now, there's a difference between making a commitment to myself. I'm going to go to the gym tomorrow. I know why. A, it feels great. B, the big picture. And because my gyms are all martial arts based, I'm actually learning also. So, you know, and then I wake up at fucking 6 a.m. and don't want to go to the gym. Well, I'm going to go. That's not about should. That's about, you know, we've talked about this. I'm talking should. Well, should what? Should what? So that's it. Things that make me feel like me. The other one, and this gets to what I was just talking about with the martial arts and stuff. I want to do more of less, not less of more. Boom. If mic drop wasn't a 2015 phrase that we're never saying again, I would say mic drop, but it is a 2016 of my friends, and all I'm going to say is boom. I'm going to do more or less, not less of more. And for me, this has to do with the fact that I am genuinely interested in so many things, but sometimes it can come at the cost of being excellent at any one of those things. I'll use my martial arts as an example. You know, I had a great chat with my karate teacher, and I won't get into all the specifics, but, you know, I have the potential to be next level with it right now, and what I own is here. Okay, here's the thing. What are you really, 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 really good at? And being that good at it is actually the thing that's going to prevent you from getting better, because you're good enough maybe, to be pretty fucking good. That's really what we're getting at here. That's the big secret of that conversation is, you know, like, I only ever wanted to be a fucking movie star and win Oscars before I'd ever really acted, right? Then even when I was doing my first season, it was like, yeah, this isn't that though. Because I was hungry and I wanted it all and I had nothing, right? So my desperation and my drive was on 10. Now, then I start to get a good career, comfortable, some bread, whatever, and ignoring those lost years, we're there again. That's where we are. So that can kind of like put me in an 85th, 95th percentile, and then maybe I don't go do the fucking Stallone where I write Rocky over a weekend. Right? I'm saying that for real. Like, I have a Rocky in me. We all do. So what in our lives, what in your life, are you good enough at that you've given up your dream? And I mean that to have the weight I just gave it. Because even as I'm saying it, I'm like, holy fuck, I got to get off this shitty podcast and go write my fucking Rocky. So anyways, my resolution is more of less, not less of more. So that, I mean, I love playing guitar. I love playing piano. I love going to the gym and fucking lifting weights. I love jiu-jitsu. I love karate. Well, I don't know if I love jiu-jitsu yet. I'm figuring that out. Blah, 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 car racing, this and that. So I'm kind of honing it down to acting, martial arts, automobile. Obviously, that includes friendships and family, but all those friendships and family grow through, it's taking care of yourself first. Lifeguards do not jump into the water and put themselves in danger to save someone who can't swim for shit. Right? Let's think about this. Let's think about this. Let's go with this one. I spend all this time in therapy, all this time in recovery, still consider that to be the fundament of my life, is treating myself well, taking care of myself so that I may offer some form of help to others, even if it's entertainment. And even if it's by not being a dick, by the way, even if it's just the negative, like even if it's by going to set and not being noticed, that's helping. The day's running fine if no one's noticing me. My ego doesn't like it, but my whatever, authentic fucking godchild self knows that it's just fine. It's right. You're helping. You're being part of the deal. So I spend all this time, this energy. I care about this. Let's say a friend of mine's a drug addict. Let's say that. Let's say a friend of mine has no sense of self. Am I going to go give up all that I've worked for and go smoke crack with them? No, it's obviously a joke. No. So why would I go smoke emotional crack with someone who is a emotional crack addict when I'm spending all this time to not do that? What? There we go. We're going with it. We're going with it. That's what I'm saying is that we have to preserve, i.e. talk, reach, throw, row, go, toe, carry, which we learned back in, I think, white level of swimming. Do they still have white? I think they've renamed it all. I think every 10 years they have to like rename it so kids get excited. But back in like when you start learning life-saving, when someone's out flailing in the water, you don't just jump in. That's what Hasselhoff does in Baywatch. Ooh, new Baywatch movie. Hashtag Alexandra Daddario. Hit me up, girl. We'll do a podcast. I just got lost in thought there at how that podcast might go. The thing is you talk and then you throw and then you reach. That one was always, talk, throw, reach, whatever. And then the point is you're not just jumping in because you're putting yourself in danger if you do that. And then once you exhaust all those possibilities and also know it's safe, you go, you tow, you carry, because that contact with the victim becomes dangerous to you. So that's one of those things where I don't want to put myself in that kind of danger, both obviously, again, emotionally and spiritually with people who are going to fucking drag me down. They're out there flailing. And where it comes back to and my sort of elitism is I have fucking trained my swimming for thousands, if not 10,000 hours. Swimming's one of those things I did as a kid like a fish. Not actually competitively. I just loved it and I loved life-saving. And I was at summer camp for months a year, like a fish, like hours a day. I spent that time through passion and also through time to do lengths, time to tread water, time to do lengths. So why would I give all that up and die for someone who's never fucking taken a swim lesson but thinks it's cool to go boating and drink? Right? So where are we doing that, folks? Where are we doing that? And my whole point in having said all that is, when I take care of my acting, my karate, my, excuse me, you know, the car stuff that's a deep love and passion and a hobby, that doesn't compromise my relationship with Emily. Because the more I take care of myself, the more that girl loves me. The more I take care of my karate, the more my friendship with Randy, my karate teacher, he and I become better friends. But the friendship's foundationed on that deeper respect that we each know we're taking care of our own shit. And that brings me to my third resolution. I just mentioned Emily. It's about a stillness. It kind of comes down to the doing more of less. It's that I want to further my own trust that that girl loves me. Now, this obviously emanates out far beyond Emily, but she's the starting point. And it really goes to that, you know, I've talked about when you're driving and I'm feeling quiet and tired and I'm not fucking singing along with the music and I'm not whatever narrating why that Pink Floyd song's from the best album they ever recorded, whereas most people think, yeah, blah, blah. I'm just sitting there, done from the day. And the number of times she looks over and is like, God, you look perfect right now. Or I know that anytime I hug her, she will hug me back. We vibe. But how nice is it when I'm sitting reading and she comes and hugs me? It's pretty fucking nice. It's a greater gift in a way to both of us a lot of times. So I'm not going to force a needlessness, but I'm not going to cultivate a neediness. Motherfucker, see, sometimes the car cast is the way to go. Sometimes the turn's a phrase we get sitting in the living room jacked on coffee's the way to go. I'm not going to fake a needlessness, but I'm not going to cultivate a neediness. It's a real, you know, I want to, and by the way, that's that place in the middle. I don't live well in the middle. I live well in extremes. I live well fucking, oh, I'm going to fucking drink everything in the bar or I'm never going to drink, which is why I went broke, because money's a process, right? Money's something that we have to use on a daily basis or every other day or whatever. Whereas you can just put down cigarettes. You know, you can't just kind of put down money and live as a fairly normal individual in the first world. It's not going to work. So same with eating. I don't have a thing around that. But for overeaters, I mean, that must be really hard, or bulimics or anorexics. I mean, you have to eat. You can't not eat. And it's daily. So then, you know, figuring out that psychological and actual relationship with something. I don't know, man. It's a journey. And I can't speak to anyone else's, but I know for me, the money thing, it didn't have as much to do with self-worth as the other stuff, as, you know, the parents drinking or as my own drinking. The money thing for me was about a lack of education. I do shop when I'm bored. I do shop when Emily's away, but I don't these days buy anything. I online shop. It's a way to kill half an hour and, you know, live a bit of a fantasy. It's a version of porn. But, you know, I don't think porn's a big deal and I don't think shopping online's a big deal. Not in excess. That's really what we're talking about. Not if you're looking at porn every day, like, well, think about that. You know, think about that. That might be a bit much to be staring at that. But if, you know, you're doing your thing, and that's the same with shopping for me. Hey, maybe my opinion will change on that in 10 years. Maybe I'll be like, you know, I've rethought the porn thing, and yes, you should look at it every day for your spiritual and mental growth, and that will help all your relationships with women by looking at porn every day. I'll probably end up there. I mean, we all know that's the answer, right? Same with online shopping. Every day probably is the way to go. Obviously not. So looking for a little more stillness, that kind of thing. Want to jump into a question here. I mentioned Randy earlier. Randy, so you know who he is. Sensei's who he is to me. So Sensei wrote me this question. Oh man, my messages hasn't updated and I don't have my phone. Okay, I won't have it right in front of me. It's a pretty simple question, which is... You know what? I want to ask the question as is. I'm going to pause and go grab my phone and read what he actually wrote me. Okay, we're back. By the way, before we get into this question, is anybody with me here that Mac products have become pieces of shit? I know the 6 Plus is a cool phone and all that, but So I got the 5S, I got the new MacBook Pro, not the newest, but new, and I've got a fucking, every fucking time this company updates something, it's worse. Like iMovie got worse. Luckily GarageBand has stayed sort of stable with their fucking shit. Every time they do this new operating system, I just went to my computer last night and all my songs were missing, like 10,000 songs. Granted, they're on my computer, but now I have to go and regenerate the pathways. They have gone to shit, and I'm not even kidding that my next phone will not be an Apple phone because it's so frustrating. It never works the same way. And the new music, it's a great subscription service. Who's kidding who? $9.99 a month, and I can just download any song, or not download, but just play any song I want at a party or whatever in high quality. That's brilliant. I mean, that's like a childhood dream come true. But the app as an interface is a big motherfucking piece of shit. Apple, you're fucking the dog and you're going to lose a customer. And it's because you fix things that aren't broken. And you do it, I fucking don't know why. Navigating that interface is a joke. It's so bad. And I'm not a Luddite. I love tech. I obviously love my older stuff too. I like what works. If it works because it's new and digital, great. If it works because it's an old Pentax 645 film camera that will never break, hey, great. It's not even better, just great. So anyways, I don't know if anyone else having this experience, but I find that ever since Mac decided, and this for me is the problem, is it's a dumbing down. There used to be a real separation. Basically, the iOS was a new thing, and then iOS being your mobile devices like your iPads and phones. And then when they tried to integrate iOS into OS, it involved the dumbing down of OS. And so now my computers and desktops, they're just they're getting shittier. And it's like, let the iPad user be the iPad user. That's not meant to be an intense thing. That's a scrolling fucking web-based thing. And let the computer user just be the person who's actually editing or actually whatever. And I don't know, I'm just terribly unimpressed. Anyways, a question from Sensei Randy Dauphin. Not a question. Please explore the idea of being the same person everywhere you are, i.e. the same on set, in the dojo, at home with friends and family. Also love these podcasts. While I never watched an episode of General Hospital, I've listened to every podcast. Keep them coming. I never watched an episode of General Hospital either. I loved being on that show, by the way. I have nothing but love for General Hospital. I've talked about it. They treated me so well and I did not. But even when I was screen testing for it, I watched half an ep and I was like, I don't think I can complete this ep or I'm going to end up like violating my screen test contract, because they just don't light it. You know, you can't shoot that volume of work and light it that well. But I got to say, the actors on that show were so surprisingly better than I gave them credit for before I'd arrived on set. So big fan. Anyways, and thank you, by the way. Seriously, thank you. I love that we can talk, and I have this with a number of friends where it's like we've been chatting. Thanks, Phil Riccio. Thanks, George S. Thanks, someone else wrote me. Drew Nelson, thanks for the nice note. I really appreciate it. It's nice to know you guys are listening and picking up on it. Okay, so I've talked about my brother's wedding. I think it was 2000, 2001, and I was actively using drugs and alcohol at the time, like really actively. And I remember when everybody got up to give speeches at his wedding, they all described the same guy. People from the Coast Guard, from his university, from his track team, from his just fun, like casual social life, from his childhood, they were giving speeches to and about the same man. And I actually started to like freak out a bit. Like while sitting there, it was a beautiful night, by the way, you know, and luckily it's one of those nights where when you drank as much as I was, no one notices it at a wedding because they are too. I always used to love holidays because you could just kind of, you know, you're already flowing and then everyone else just kind of catches up. So it was one of those things where it was probably the first time I thought I need to get off booze and drugs. And you know, there's a point to this, because for people who aren't on booze and drugs, I do believe that we still have these things we have guilt and shame about. And to me, guilt and shame are the thing that prevent me from being the same in front of a boss or in front of an underling. You know, if I'm directing a film, I shouldn't be that much different than if I'm being directed. Granted, my responsibilities are different, and that will elicit different aspects of my character. And I had to learn that those are very different things. You know, so for example, Sensei, if you're teaching class, you're not going to be the same guy quote unquote behaviorally as if you're in class, but you're still the same guy because you have different responsibilities in both cases. And so what's being elicited from you. So to me, that still falls under the banner of unity. I'm still, you know, being me. Where I'm not being me is where I'm worried about information or aspects of my behavior getting out. And I don't know. This again for me is the gift of that bottom. I don't believe my emails are really that private. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's just, come on, it's so easy if you have wherewithal to probably get into my emails. There's nothing in there. Like, you know, there's nothing in my bag of secrets that I don't even fucking talk about on this podcast. So let's talk about that, because I talked about this with Katie Boland, which is, but is that still revelatory? You know, oh, I shot heroin. Oh, I drove drunk. Oh, I cheated on girlfriends. Okay, so wait a minute. How much worse can it get? Well, I've never murdered or sexually assaulted anyone, but I've fucking probably spent $100,000 on strippers. Where's that fit? Like, you know what I'm saying? The point is that this is just information. It's not who I am, but it is what I did. So at a certain point, where does who I am and what I do become who I am? And that was the thing that kept me from acknowledging or taking responsibility for my behavior, which I would say it with my mom, like having a drink and saying I don't drink. Well, no, you don't get to do that. So where does the unity come from? Because saying stuff, saying on the podcast, oh, I used to do this, it doesn't actually make me honest. In other words, it doesn't clear the decks. So what I had to learn is a process of amends. Now, again, we talk about this. Like, if I come to you, anybody who I've ever known, I basically had to go to and apologize to. And I say, listen, I'm sorry for my behavior. I was a jagoff. I take responsibility for it. I had a drink and drug problem. And I didn't know how to honor our relationship or friendship or commitments. Pretty straightforward. But it doesn't mean anything unless the behavior backs it up. So if I say, oh, me and Emily, we're getting married, but then we never get married. No, it's just a conversation piece. Or if I say, oh, me and Emily are breaking up, but we never move out of the house together. Oh, it's just a conversation piece. It might signal an intent. The point is that that's not, I'm just a guy. Who am I? I'm a guy living with her. What I'm really trying to get at is the words are surface level. What had to happen for me is a behavioral. And by the way, I'm not saying I'm the same in all these places, but I feel like it. So I'm answering it as though I'm that guy. I just am. You might disagree. People who know me might disagree. But I'd be happy to have anybody from my karate life sit in on me teaching. Anybody, any of my students come watch me on set. I'd happily, probably pretty hot to have people come watch me make love. That'd be the real teaching. I would not want that because it's private, but I would not be embarrassed if somehow a tape of that got out. It wouldn't be like, oh, all of it. Like this guy, again, I can't spoiler the How to Make a Murder thing, but I'm not worried that any one facet of my life learns anything about any other facet of my life. So at that point, the only vestiges just might be self-worth, right? Is that if I tell a joke, is it worth it? Because you know me, Sensei, like I'm a jokey guy. So if I'm hanging out with the karate crew, when is it appropriate given that there's a rank hierarchy? Well, I think that the answer there comes, I'm not that worried about making a mistake. You know, if I overstep, I'll figure it out. I'll either feel it or be told. And that's kind of life. You know, life's going to tell me if life, oh my God, I'm watching this Amy Winehouse documentary. And Tony Bennett said, life teaches you how to live it. You just got to live long enough. Obviously, she didn't. She never got over that hump. But I feel like that's kind of where it's at. And the one thing that life has taught me is that being different in the dojo than I am on stage with my band, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. There's no joy there. However, different situations elicit different character. So where I'll leave it is that I used to think that if I was known as a real energetic, fun guy, I had to be that all the time or else I was being inauthentic. That's what's ironic, right? Is that I thought that that was what was expected and therefore that's who I was. So then what happens is I unbearably become that at all times. And that's the beauty of nuance and living in the middle. The thing I'm not good at is Sean gets tired, so being tired in the dojo is okay. Sean gets excited, so being excited in the dojo is okay. And it's true for Set. It's true for, I've never found it not to be true anywhere. It doesn't mean I get to do what I want, because life will tell me how to live it. Someone, Emily will be like, can you please simmer? Like, you're, you know, whatever. But at least it's still actual aspects of my actual character. So that's part of it too, is letting go of that definition of self. And when I don't define myself, I can just kind of be. And then I can, and again, okay, I love this question, which is why I keep going with it and maybe not giving a great specific answer. But what that used to mean for me is if I wasn't running the show, it meant I was a people pleaser. So again, the all or nothing. I'm either just trying to fit into your gap so you like me, or I'm running the show because A, I think I'm actually pretty good at leadership, but also I don't know how to sit in that middle where it's me. I'm saying yes, sir, to the boss, but I'm not abdicating who I am. And I had to learn that service, quiet service, and again, like the lifeguard thing, not at the expense of who I am. So I'm not going to go become a Nazi because I'm in quiet service to a manifesto that's not mine. But I'll do quiet service anywhere else I can that I believe in. I hope that fucking makes sense. But for me, it really comes down to, I don't have a lot of guilt or shame right now about, and that, by the way, Drew Nelson said something nice. It was a private message, but he did talk about, you know, being able to air out the stuff I air out. I don't, maybe it is courageous or bold. I know that it helps me. I mean, that's the most honest thing I can say. To just speak honestly about how I perceive things is great. And it doesn't mean I'm right, by the way. I talked a couple podcasts ago about, you know, the acting class experience I had. That might not have been how it happened, right? Like, if you listen to my story of that, there's a lot of things I'm imagining happened to create the link from A to B, to where the guy said, I don't want you in my class, to where he said, oh, I do. I'm filling in gaps there. That might not be how it went. Or even with Callum, with the Katie Boland podcast. I'm okay with my stupid assumptions because they're not really hurting anybody, you know? So it's not a big deal, but I have to acknowledge that it's how I perceive it. It's not how it happened. And I'd be the first if someone was like, by the way, that's not what happened. What happened was blah, blah, blah. I'd go, oh, okay, cool. I just needed something to be angry about for a while. But so those perceptions and the way I get to air out my perceptions, it really helps me. So maybe I'm undercutting the fact that it is kind of cool that I can do this. But what I'm getting at is it really helps me alleviate guilt and shame. And when I can alleviate guilt and shame, then I'm not worried. Emily can come watch any of my photo shoots of girls who want to shoot in a bra or whatever. She might not love it, but I'm okay with what I'm doing there because nothing wrong is happening. And that's part of it too. Now, would Emily like the sameness of me? Because again, we're talking about eliciting of different aspects. I don't know. I mean, I've shot Emily a bunch and it works great for us. So not everyone's going to like every second or every moment, but I can't be beholden to that. I just get to be beholden to what I know to be right. And I have to be open to that changing, and I have to be open to knowing that I'm behind what's actually right. So I can't get too entrenched in what I think is right. Hannah Anderson, God bless you, my dear. Guest on this show. How are you? Actors' expectations. Oh, she said I wanted to ask you about LA. And I said, what about LA? And she said, actors' expectations versus their actual experience of it. Why everyone feels they need to go. I feel there's this constant pressure to go. And if you don't, it's harder to be considered a serious or successful actor. And talk about my own decision not to go for business this year. Hannah, I love this question. You know, so I went down there, as you know, with great excitement. And I basically could only hook up one solid meeting with an agent, and they wanted to sign me. And upon reflection of everything, the cost of going down there with the exchange rate, the fact that they weren't like a top 10 agent, and the roster didn't seem to match with the kind of thing. And they were real hot on me. They were lovely. They were, you know, it was a good meeting, and they were like, we love your work. We're very whatever. And, you know, that's kind of how those meetings go. Like, they're interested or they're not. And if they're interested, they're really interested until they're not. It's more drastic, I find, down in LA, in my experience. They're 100% behind you and then 0% behind you. So I decided with my Canadian agent that that wasn't even enough of a lateral move. That was our feeling. And the other thing is I need more options. You know, this isn't about love. This is about business. And I don't think you're ever advantaged in business when you just kind of take what you can get. Nor in love. Definitely there. It just didn't seem like a great fit. And the other thing is, I fucking love being in Toronto. I mean, LA has my heart in a way that no city ever will. But this being here feels really good to me. And I can always go to LA. I still can't remember what I've done podcast wise since then. But I mean, I did this one acting class there with a bunch of people from Toronto. It was fucking magnificent. These people are dynamic, awesome. They've obviously worked enough that they can get down to LA on some kind of a visa or green card. And it was great. But we're also doing that up here. But honestly, I'm starting at the end there. My decision not to go for business is that I didn't think it would be good enough business to warrant the outlay of both time, energy, all that kind of thing. I don't know if that's going to end up having been a good or bad decision. You know, this idea for me that I'm just focusing on acting for a while and not teaching. I mean, I'll coach and do headshots, but I'm not focusing on those things is, it's a way for me to create space, you know, to get things you want, you have to say no to things you don't want. Now, I don't not want to go to LA and do auditions there. I just know what it's like to be in LA without a great agent. And my experience is that it wasn't good. It was very frustrating. And I'd have probably, if it weren't for my band years ago, I'd have probably come back much sooner and probably kickstarted this awesome thing I got going on much sooner. Actors' expectations versus their actual experience of it. This one's, again, a bit of a tough one for me, Hannah, because I went when I was in theater school, and I was kind of going, like, I'm going to LA for the fun of it. And I did have a meeting with William Morris set up, so I kind of got to go in at the high end without any investment, because there was no way that was going to happen then. I wasn't even looking to move there. So I was kind of lucky, because my first taste to LA came before I had any desire at that time. It was like I was doing homework. And I really recommend this to people, by the way, like, go to LA to see what it's like, so that when you do go down there with the series under your belt and the buzz, everything's not fucking crazy. You know, you've already maybe got a restaurant that feels comfortable, and you maybe know where some neighborhoods are. And that's kind of what I did, was I did a bit of homework and I grounded myself before I went there. Obviously, it didn't help, but it did not help because, again, I got there and I got working. Why does everyone feel they need to go? I'll tell you why I feel I need to go, and even still, it is the fucking epicenter of movie stardom. I mean, if I want that Oscar, I mean, you can do the Rachel McAdams. I don't know her, but to my understanding, she still has a house in the Annex and kind of bases herself out of Toronto, but her business is still out of LA. You know, her business is out of LA. That for me is something important, to be willing to go to the show, so to speak. I don't know. I don't negate our Canadian industry, but, you know, we think, oh, our dollar's low. Well, that's pretty good because we'll get more Hollywood movies up here. And that's a real thought. That should be a real thought. That is a benefit to us. But it fucking sucks because I can't order car parts from the States right now. Like, it hurts me in so many ways, but it's actually going to give me the money so that I can order car parts, because I'm going to probably end up working on a bunch of shit. But it's all coming from there. That's really it. By the way, do you want to know why I went in the first place? I had who I still consider to have been the best agent in Canada at the time, and she couldn't get me an audition for the Anakin Skywalker that Hayden Christensen ended up booking. By the way, Hayden Christensen's Canadian. And I remember saying, I want to get an audition for that. And she's like, well, they're not going to cast that out of Toronto. And they didn't. They cast Hayden out of LA. So that day I knew I was going to LA. Like that day. So that for me is why I felt I needed to go, because it really actually does offer, you know, I think one year I read that we were going to have 7 or 8 new series, and there they have 400. So that numbers is whatever. A lot more people there, but, you know, you're a good actress. I'm a good actor. So I have to assume that the number of shitty actors off a bus who don't know how to do what I know how to do is far greater than the number who are brilliant coming from Topeka, Kansas, and you know what I'm saying. So there's a constant pressure to go, and if you don't, it's harder to be considered a serious or successful actor. Maybe that part I think's in your head. I really do. I know we all say it. I really do. I have never had more success in correlation to me having been in LA and then coming back. Even, by the way, when I was like shooting General Hospital, or just before that when I was down in LA Buzz. In my experience, I've never gained anything. Now, when I got back, I went from not being here for guest leads to being here for guest leads. So it felt like a boost. And of course, the topic of conversation with every casting director was, oh my God, you've been in LA. How was it? But it's still irrelevant to me booking the part. I really believe that. So I think this is a great question. And I'm always trying to be a bit helpful with this shit, if not funny. I think that one's in your head. I think any actors listening, you are just as serious and just as successful out of this city. And again, look at the Rachel McAdams example. It's a brilliant example. You know, whether she stays in Toronto or not's irrelevant. The point is she's fostered that career from here for the most part. I don't know that this story is true about her. So please, this is not a known, I don't know. She was screen testing for something from Toronto. And then while down there, I think read for the hot chick, but didn't get the first thing she screen tested, but then got the hot chick. So the point is her career in LA started without her quote unquote going, even though of course you're going to go screen test. Like if they phone you to screen test, you're going to go down. I don't know if any of that's true, but let's assume it's true. I know that that has worked for some people. I went because I wanted to go. By the way, yes, okay, fuck. I went because I wanted to go. I'd always wanted to go to LA. I've told this story on the podcast. I turned down a 5-year option on a series contract and then a 3-year option because I was 27 and I didn't want to go to LA when I was 30, 32. I was like 27. My first series had just got canceled. And I actually said to my agent, I don't want to play a lawyer for another 3 to 5 years. I just did it for 2. This is where I was at, right? I didn't even want to do TV anymore. Like, this is what I forget is that I just had these, this is what's interesting is I felt like me. Sean was like, I got to go to LA. I grew up watching fucking Hollywood movies. I want to go be in Hollywood movies or Hollywood TV or whatever. And, it ended up kind of happening. You know, I was on a show that I'd watched as a kid because I went to LA. So that for me is one of those things where that was all about desire. It wasn't considered. And even this winter, my decision not to go is because, given what the case is, I don't want to. Man, I hope that's helpful. I feel like I ranted along with both of those questions, but they were such good questions, and there's so much juice there. Okay, you know what? I was going to play one song, but I'm going to hook up the mic. I'm going to pause this for a sec, and then I'm going to play a tune I wrote on a piano. And actually, Sensei Dauphin, I was once at your house early and I wrote the chorus for this there because I couldn't figure it out for like a year. And then sitting at your piano waiting for you to get home, I actually discovered this chorus. So I'm about to hook this up. Give me a sec. Okay, here's this new piano I got, and I'm not gonna like run the piano into the keys and everything, but into the unit. This isn't a pro thing. I just want to play a little song for you. Hannah, this is about, I wrote this one the night I moved back from LA 5 and a bit years ago. So I thought it was mildly appropriate. And let's see how this sounds. I'm coming home. I'm coming home. I've been gone so long. How I've changed. Lord, I pray I've changed. When I walked away, I never once looked back. I never said your name. But now the tracks beneath this old train are pulling in the station. Why don't you meet me at the station? The station of our hometown. Why don't you meet me there? We'll walk on through the old town square. Pull our collars up against the wind and walk across our favorite bridge. We'll drop a coin into the stream and I'll kiss you. Where's that go? Frozen, no frozen breath. You and me can dream of one day leaving, but it's only me that left. I'm coming home. All the things I've seen and done, always on the run, running to or from, running to or from. All the things I've seen and done, and every drunken stumbling night, ah, that gave its way to brighter days, I never said your name. But now the tracks beneath this old train are pulling in the station. Why don't you meet me at the station? The station of our hometown. Why don't you meet me there? We'll walk on through the old town square. Pull our collars up against the wind and walk across our favorite bridge. We'll drop a coin into the stream and I'll kiss your frozen breath. You and me can dream of one day leaving, but it's only me that left.
And that is a wrap, my friends. Thank you for listening. God, it's nice to be back in studio for a little. Maybe I'll play a little bit more music for you. Let me know what you think. If you enjoy it, that is a wrap on Chatting Between Takes. Happy New Year!